Palace.
Hour three, final hour, your Monday edition of Justice and Drew is underway. We are still joined by Jason Flores from Americans for Prosperity. Plus, we'll be joined by Representative Tom Emmer in a little over 20 minutes, so you want to stick around for that.
There's a Jason Flores, Americans for Prosperity, joins us in studio. Kind of along the same lines, there's a story out of the Star Tribune this morning. Property taxes are rising, objections are being raised, but in St. Paul and Minneapolis, criticism has come with a twist. Jeffrey Strand, a longtime activist in the Shingle Creek neighborhood north of Minneapolis, told city council members a few weeks ago that a property tax statement he received in November projected a 17.6 increase in 2019. Nobody in my circle of friends or neighbors can afford that long term and stay in their homes. He added, however, he was proud to live in a progressive city and willing to pay for good government measures that include opening housing opportunities to people of color who lost their homes in the mortgage crisis a decade ago.
I'm going to need another cup of coffee.
There you go. There you go. He added, right? He says, for some, the tax bite will be acute, but in truth, but the truth in taxation hearings in Minneapolis and St. Paul, the voices of the tax weary were swamped by those who came to applaud investments in affordable housing, parks, and recreation programming.
Of course they were.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least according to that reporter. They were swamped, and that's what gets left out. All right, we got state leaders crowing about overtaxing us by $1.5 billion, at a minimum. Then we've got property taxes rising across the state.
Yep.
City leaders are saying we need more. We just need more. We got to throw millions of dollars at these affordable housing initiatives. You've got school levies being passed, left and right across the state. I mean, the tax burden, when you combine everything and all together, it really is getting to the point where it's going to be unbearable for a lot of people.
And in a lot of fronts, those local tax concerns are going to feed directly into the state debate, where they're going to go to the state legislature begging for more money to do more things. Mm-hmm. And the state, because they think that they already have this surplus, because they already overcharge taxpayers, that's free money then that they can kick back and provide relief. So like you guys were talking about earlier today, government creating this problem of higher and higher taxes because they keep on spending more and more money on some good things. Yes, on some good things that make your heart feel good and that meet a need in a community. But is it the proper role of government to be doing that? And then, is government spending those tax dollars efficiently? Look at what the Dayton administration, as an example, has wasted money on. Hundreds of millions of dollars to websites that don't work, to registration systems that can't register, to waste, fraud, and abuse in healthcare programs that isn't even investigated, isn't even cared about anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet, at the same time, they're asking for more money.
But Jason, he extended the water buffer strips. So...
because our farmers are doing so good right now, they don't need that extra bit of land that they own.
Right, exactly.
Right? Pay no attention to property rights.
Let's talk a little bit about this this tax conformity issue. One of the things that Governor Mark Dayton vetoed was federal tax conformity, which, if it doesn't pass, is going to cause major headaches for Minnesota taxpayers. We were told that when the next session comes in, they'll knock it out first thing.
Plenty of time to take care of it.
We'll get it done. It'll be fine, everybody. Just chill out. Now we're hearing that might not be the case.
Make no mistake. We're talking about gas tax increases. We're talking about the new House majority and the governor reinstating the provider tax. There's all this talk of new taxes. There is already a tax increase baked into this surplus number. Because by not taking action to conform the state's tax code to the federal number, we have already raise taxes on Minnesotans across the board.
And when you talk about that $1.5 billion surplus, that projection assumes there will not be tax conformity.
Right. That is current law. So it doesn't take into account what they may do or what they might talk about. It doesn't take into account the tax relief that was provided as part of that tax conformity bill the last time around. It's technical in nature, and you're going to hear Democrat leadership here in the state blaming federal tax reform and the way they did it. But what the feds did was they found a way to lower your rates. And what Minnesota is refusing to do is to lower your rates on now a higher federal taxable income. And so it's ridiculous then that as soon as the page flips and the new calendar year comes in, new budget comes in, it's just assumed to be part of the budget. So there are hundreds of millions of dollars out of that overcharge statement that was released last week that is directly the result of Minnesota charging taxpayers more.
651-989-5855. Let's go and talk with Brian in Fridley. Good morning, Brian. Welcome to Twin Cities News Talk, Justice and Drew. And you're also on with Jason Flores from Americans for Prosperity.
Good morning, guys. Hey, just a quick question. I want to make sure I understood that last statement right about the state poll taxes getting raised. What was it, 17%?
That was Minneapolis taxes that you were reading about.
Yes, 17.6.
Okay. So some people can't afford to pay them taxes on their house, correct?
According to the article here, the guy was complaining that, yes, there were some of his friends and neighbors can't afford that long term.
So what they're doing is they're taxing the people that can afford their housing that aren't going to be able to afford their housing to give that money to lower income families to afford housing?
Yes.
There you go.
That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Well, it's government.
it is Minneapolis.
Let's take away stuff from people that can afford it and give it to people that we'll be able to afford it short term, but then we'll be back to where we were when everybody's losing their houses.
Yes. Wow. Yes. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for the clarity, guys.
Yeah.
It's that circular controversy. Look, and the same thing when you look at the surplus. I was thinking about it in the middle when we were talking about it. Not that I want to deviate from where we are now on tax conformity, but based off of his phone call, you know, it would be fantastic if they took that money and went and spent it on the things that it needs to be spent on. But in doing so, the DFL takes away the ability, by and large, to argue raising taxes and taking more money away. And so they're so accustomed to doing that, and we need to raise taxes and raise more revenue, that I'm incredibly fearful about how they're going to go and actually spend that $1.5 billion because they can't actually have it fix any problems, because they need those problems to argue their points.
Well, and one of the worst terms ever devised at the state legislature is the term fully fund, because there's no end to it,
right?
Because then you can always generate more need. So even if you are doing a good job on some core functions of government and you see some improvements, then you talk about fully fund. Well, we could use a little more. There's always a little more. The problem is, objectively, Minnesota taxpayers are not getting improvements for the billions and billions of dollars more that we spend each and every biennium on government services.
Yeah.
Look at educational outcomes as an example. We're throwing more money at a problem to try to solve a problem, and yet the outcomes are stuck in the mud. If you could show me how these additional revenues were going to relate to better success, more kids being qualified, ready to get jobs, that'd be something different. But you're not even doing that. You're just saying we need more money. You're just saying, well, 3-3 on the formula is a good year. That's not enough.
Can you reiterate the increase in spending that we've seen over the 8 years of the Dayton administration?
Since Governor Dayton took office to the end of the current budget, which will be his last budget, that 8 years of budget, we are spending 50% more than what we were spending when he first took office.
And what is so markedly different than from the beginning of his term, right? What has government done? What are they providing? What are they giving us? What services are we receiving that are so markedly better than at the beginning of his term?
I don't know.
Because last I checked, you know, his MNLARS, you know, his update of the vehicle registration system still doesn't work very well. MNSURE, you know, a lot of problems with that. That hasn't really reaped the benefits that they said it was going to reap. Are the achievement gap in Minneapolis and St. Paul public schools.
It's still stuck worse than the nation.
It's as bad as it's ever been.
Congestion is worse.
Yeah, traffic congestion is far worse than it was 8 years ago. I can certainly speak to that.
So what are we getting for the dollars that we're already spending? For this 150% increase that no family out there has seen that kind of an increase in their personal finances over the course of the last 8 years. And now you're going to ask, and you have a new administration here with Governor-elect Walz preparing for ask for even more taxes without even coming in and saying, I'm going to fix these problems first.
They're not asking for more. They're just going to take more taxes. There's no asking. If they asked, that'd be one thing. If they came to me and said, hey, Drew, would you like to pay some more taxes? And I would say no. And they say, okay, well, we'll try your neighbor.
And if you ask Minnesotans, they don't want new taxes either, whether it's a gas tax, whether it's government that so many times talks about trying to help people afford health care. Well, they've given more people a government insurance card. under a Medicaid expansion and under Obamacare. But turns out then that you can't use it because the provider networks have shrunk. There's maybe only one doctor or one provider in your county, so you have to go two counties across. It's not healthcare. And now they're talking about reinstating this provider tax set to expire, which just costs you, as a consumer, more money every single time that you go to a doctor to pay for that same not working government healthcare system.
I'll honestly be very, and I am very, very curious to see how people react once Walz gets into office and wants to go and raise the gas tax in light of this surplus. From the standpoint of, and Drew, you mentioned it, you know, during the election he ran on it. And people went out there and obviously voted for him,
right,
with him running on that. But and no evidence of this apart from what we've talked about, you know, I don't think a majority of people at the time were thinking that far ahead. I think it was more of a, we need to, because of Trump and a bunch of other reasons, you know, elect this particular individual. His head's in the right place. They weren't thinking beyond sort of, this is going to actually cost me money. It was more of a referendum than it was anything else. And I'm wondering how they're going to sort of resolve, do the mental gymnastics in their mind when he does go to raise the gas tax in light of this now. Because I would think that a majority of people, being rational, would be like, why are you still raising our taxes if we have a $1.5 billion surplus?
I think there's going to be a lot of people asking that. There's going to be a lot of people that have a little bit of a nasty hangover following their vote in November because of these consequences that they weren't thinking about at the time.
Right.
They were thinking about sending a message to Trump, plain and simple. And they did that by going up and down the ballot on one side of the ledger. And once you get into this budget and you see what this governor-elect is going to do on new taxes on transportation, on new taxes on healthcare, on new taxes on prescription drugs, people are going to say, whoa, 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 that's not what I voted for. Didn't you guys already over collect $1.5 billion and now you want more? And didn't you already fail to act on fixing Minnesota's tax code so that the benefits of federal tax reform could come down to me? You already took that money too. And now you want more. Even though you can't run a website, you can't run a registration system, and you can't plan for fixing road, they're going to say no, plain and simple. Whether they say no enough, whether we're successful in providing a voice for those people during the legislative session to actually stop it from happening, or if in 2 years the people have to speak again, only this time on local issues, well, then that's what's going to happen. But that support is simply not there, and it's going to be the same old debate from Democrats during this legislative session. We need more money to do more stuff.
Yeah.
And then not do it very well at all.
Well, we got a few minutes left. Jason Flores from Americans for Prosperity. I want to get your thoughts on this story that popped up from NPR over the weekend. A quartet of rural members of the Minnesota House say they will split from fellow Republicans and form their own caucus to oppose the incoming DFL majority. These representatives are Steve Druskowski, Cal Barr, Tim Miller, and Jeremy Munson notified House leaders Friday of their intentions. Miller wrote, "I have come to the conclusion that the attitudes and actions by the HRC, the House Republican Caucus leader, and some of his supporters have become too hostile toward me and have made it impossible to properly serve my district first and the state of Minnesota second. Those are my priorities." Sounds like there's some pretty significant infighting that's happening with the Republicans, which is not good news when they're going to have to stand very united to sort of, you know, they're not going to be able to stop the DFL from passing whatever their agenda, but,
right,
you know, a strong, united Republican caucus could at least pump the brakes on some of the more egregious plans that the DFL wants to go through, especially considering we still have that one vote majority in the Senate.
Right, and this is on the House side, not on the Senate side.
Correct.
So I think that this isn't going to change anything in terms of how these four representatives vote. It's not like it's on the Democrat side or the moderate side of the caucus that they're going to break off inside. These are four very staunch, very solid conservatives who probably wish that the caucus had been even more conservative in the way that they had governed when they had the majority. And I think a case can be made for that. I personally don't like the public displays of disunion or sour grapes, or they're personal conflict here. I have no idea what goes into it. I just know that you're still going to be able to count on those four votes to stand up against what the governor's proposing and what the House Democratic caucus is proposing. I hope that they bring it together for that unified voice. But again, in the deep majority now that House members find themselves in, there's going to be some soul searching going on, and there's going to be some internal conversation and conflict on the Republican side. And yet I think they all come out and vote no against these kind of tax increases that are just bad for Minnesota.
How much of it do you think perhaps could be, let's do this and let's see what the response is and see if anybody else joins us with this? You know, maybe these four individuals are like, hey, we're gonna kind of step out, you know, out in front, and we're gonna make this move in order to kind of open up the door for other individuals who may end up feeling the same way.
Well, I think that these four guys have a very, they have very conservative policy positions. They come from very conservative districts in the state, and that is a policy avenue that we need more of at the state capitol. And yet at the same time, for the last couple of years, even with control of the House and Senate, it's been, you know, two parts of the three legs of government. So there's going to be compromise. There is some form of pragmatism that has to enter in. So we can go back and we can rehash the last couple of years all we want. And I think this is more about the last couple of years and bad feelings from that rather than what we need to do moving forward. Because moving forward, there is no question that conservatives need to remain united in opposition to especially the most egregious pieces of this new governor's plan in terms of the tax increases, the regulatory increases, and problems like that.
Tom in St. Paul, real quick. Good morning, Tom.
Okay, you guys are pretty much discussing exactly what I'm thinking here. And so we hold one seat in the Senate. What's the chance of, in order to pass a law, all three branches have to come to an agreement, correct?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right, so this, we have one seat majority in the Senate. What's the chance of the Senate holding the ground and preventing some of these tax increases coming?
I think it depends a little bit on which tax increases you're talking about. I think that the gas tax, as an example, is a easier one to hold together, to hold that caucus together against, because they've been able to fund transportation through the general fund in the past, where it should be as a core priority of government. I think that you have a few folks who are softer on some of the health and human services type issues and some of the pieces that come up that way. So you have a couple senators that have already shown a willingness to take a vote, you know, one way or another on those issues. It depends a little bit on how existential this becomes for the Senate. I mean, where they want to draw that line in the sand on. They are in a different world this year. I don't want to read too much into past votes, because they're in a different world now without the House backstopping them.
What I'm worried about happening is that we'll get to the end of the session and the gas tax, for example, will get lumped into a big omnibus bill, and then the Senate will say, well, gosh, you know, there's so much stuff in this bill that we just have to pass. It's really unfortunate that they put the gas tax in right there, but we can't not pass this bill because it is so important.
Right.
That's been the history, right? That's how a lot of bad ideas end up coming into law. Jason Flores, Americans for Prosperity. We are unfortunately out of time. Give out your website.
No problem. You can find us at americansforprosperity.org. Check out there, sign up. We've got events coming up, and we'd love to have your help fighting back against some of these policies as the legislative session begins.
Thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely.
Congress moves the shutdown fight deep into December. We'll talk with Representative Tom Emmer about that next.
Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Welcome back to your Monday edition of Justice and Drew. It's been far too long since we have enjoyed the company of Representative Tom Emmer. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew.
Thank you for giving us some time on this Monday morning.
Well, I'm sorry I missed you on Friday.
That's all right. It happens. I don't even think we've talked to you since you've ascended to the ranks of the NRCC.
Be careful, you know. One of my colleagues said, hey, that's pretty impressive, Emmer. You cleared the field. And I said, Alex, did it ever occur to you that nobody else wants the job?
We were
actually a pretty good job, though. I mean, if you think about it, we're going to be running a massive nationwide business, and it's about, you know, carrying the agenda that I think we failed on actually communicating in the last election.
Yeah, the one question I wanted to ask is, you know, what attracted you to that job? What drew you to that job?
I'm going to be in the minority. I mean, if you think about it, Andrew, 75% of our Republican conference that is going to return for the 116th Congress, they've never served in the minority. They don't know what it's like. Mm-hmm. I had that opportunity after being in the majority in the Minnesota House of Representatives to serve in the minority. You know, it's not that much fun. You you try to work with your colleagues across the aisle, but they have an agenda that usually is diametrically opposed to yours. You are representing a certain viewpoint, so your job is to try and advance that viewpoint. And it's very difficult to do in the minority. So for me, Andrew, you ask, it wasn't something that I planned on doing, but when the election took place, and I really thought it was a missed opportunity. You look, you got 117 million people that voted in this midterm. It's a record, but it wasn't a presidential record. The national news media want to give you this narrative that there's a political realignment taking place in America, and particularly in the suburbs. I challenge that. I don't think that's true. I think this is still a center-right country. I think if you look, 37% of the electorate identified as Democrats, 33% identified as Republicans. So a D+4, that's pretty consistent with what we've seen over the last several cycles. 30% identified as independents. And those 30%, gentlemen, in the last week of the campaign, they fell 12 points in favor of the Democrats. That is where we lost the majority. And it really comes down to the Democrats were talking about health care. They were talking about pre-existing conditions. They don't have a solution, but they were at least talking about it. And the president doubled down on some other issues that weren't very poignant or relevant to the suburban voter, the independent. They wanted to hear about economic issues. I mean, we had the best jobs report you could possibly have 4 days before the election, and we couldn't get people to recognize that is all because of the great work that we've done over the last 2 years.
Yeah, and it really is, you know, action reaction. You know, the Trump presidency was and continues to be, at least for the moment, an anomaly in the standpoint of we are very much in uncharted territory. And you look at you look at the last election and the loss in the House, but the pickup in the Senate. Some is to be expected, some's not to be expected. And again, not making any excuses, but that is to say that, you know, the rules as it applies to what we've seen in elections and in politics just simply don't apply anymore. And especially when you have a mainstream media that is so willing to go along with Democrat talking points to push their narratives. You know, we're living in unprecedented and times that nobody can predict, you know, what tomorrow's going to bring.
And John, I could not, you are spot on. The only thing I would say is, it's up to you guys, you know, media outlets like yours to try and show both sides of the argument, to try and give different views from different perspectives. You don't typically get that from the national news media. Where I'm at, I've got a lot of my colleagues that just want to complain about it. We really have to do our part of trying to communicate directly with the people that we're trying to encourage them to vote for us. And it's going to be very interesting as we go forward because the... 31 seats. So the Democrats currently have members occupying 31 congressional seats that Donald Trump won in 2016. We only have three members who are in seats that Hillary Clinton won. Out of the 31, there are 22 new members. We need 18 or 19 seats, depending on what happens in North Carolina. And it's definitely doable. But people who are out there that really want their voice heard, they need to understand it doesn't just happen because you talk about it. You're really going to have to work for it because the other side does.
Story out of NPR, Congress voted to delay the threat of a partial government shutdown until December 21st as lawmakers try to avoid political sniping. The main sticking point in the spending negotiations is President Trump's demand for $5 billion for construction of a wall along the southwest border between the United States and Mexico. And I know one of your biggest frustrations, one of your biggest pet peeves as a member of Congress so far has been this sort of punting of spending bills, punting of appropriations bills, and moving them along just a little bit here and there. What's your take on what's currently going on with this potential shutdown fight?
well, this, the media will never give this president a fair shake, because what they're not reporting, it's all about his wall, right? It's all about that funding. What they're not reporting is he is working to make a deal and give Democrats all kinds of things that they've asked for on the immigration side, and for that matter, moderate Republicans. So they're not reporting that stuff, Andrew. I mean, they're just making this about one issue. And really what the issue is Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi have taken the position, as they have for the last 2 years, that we're just going to say no to everything. I mean, you watch today. Now they're saying his word is not trustworthy. So we're not going to do that. So if we're going to have that kind of rhetoric coming from the left, how can a pragmatic president, which he is, I mean, the people that are out there, he will do deals. He's shown us that with Nancy and Chuck a year ago, September, when he offered them a whole bunch of stuff on the DACA kids and all the rest. He'll do deals. But they're playing some political game, which, quite frankly, I think the American public's sick and tired of it. It's not just me, Andrew. I think they are. And I think if it shuts down, which, you know, there's a lot of people on my side who say, no way. You know, all the appropriations bills are done. The ones that are remaining are done. They're waiting to go. The Senate just needs to pass them. That's why they extended it to March 21st, which, quite frankly, I think we should have been more aggressive. I don't know why we keep kicking that can down the road. I understand Nancy's trying to put together a coalition to get reelected as Speaker. I understand she has to make certain promises to get there, and that has something to do with this equation. But as long as Republicans are in charge, we should act like it. And on this one, we'll see. I don't think the president, I think it's a 50-50 chance that he shuts it down. We'll see.
Getting to some of the big news, especially from Friday, the Mueller investigation, the filings when it comes to Cohen, and all of the all the commentary over the weekend from Democrats about what could happen, what may happen with the president. Curious to get your thoughts, Tom Emmer.
Well, I mean, I've seen the articles. I think they're jumping ahead in this impeachment stuff and all the rest. I mean, what we've got Mueller, who's been out there for how long? And now this is coming out, and it's being done in a way that is more media-driven than anything else. And I haven't read them, John, so I will always reserve the right to say, okay, well, I see something in this one. I've been here for the last couple of years as this whole process has been unwinding, and it just seems to be a lot of political theater. And you've got to remember, Manafort and Cohen clearly is a bad guy. This guy, he doesn't have any scruples. But they got huge jail time hanging over their head. They can't fight with the government. The government's got the deepest pockets on the face of the planet. The government's basically telling these guys, we are going to bankrupt you. We are going to destroy you. We are going to put you in jail. And then, I don't know, are they saying, unless you cooperate and tell us these things? I mean, talk to Howard Root about how the government behaves when it's got a claim against it, and how they'll manufacture things. I just don't know what to believe, and I think we really have to dig down and see what the facts are before, you know, people like Jerry Nadler start running off and telling us what this means.
One last question for you while we got you, Representative Tom Emmer. You mentioned the possibility that Nancy Pelosi may be the next Speaker of the House. I'm curious, you know, to get your take on, you know, since the election, since we learned that Democrats would be assuming the majority in the House, what's the mood been like amongst, you know, your colleagues on the House from both sides of the aisle? Do you get the sense that there is strong support for Nancy Pelosi as Speaker, or do you think that she may run into some significant challenges?
Well, my understanding is two of Minnesota's newest members, this could be incorrect, but I was told that Angie Craig and Dean Phillips actually stood up for her in their meeting. So these are people, and there's others that either didn't take a position or openly said when they were campaigning that they weren't going to vote for this.
I believe Dean Phillips said that he would not support her as Speaker, and I believe you are correct that when she did the whip up there last week or 2 weeks ago, that he did express support for her.
Yeah. So, I mean, Andrew, I think the mood on our side, quite candidly, I think a lot of my colleagues don't understand that they're about to be in the minority. I think they're still behaving like they're going to be running this thing, that they're going to be governing. That's not the case. I mean, every time a Republican thinks that he or she can somehow beat the system, and, you know, we got a Senate on the other side that you know, there are ways to do this where you can leverage a seat at the table if Mitch McConnell and his colleagues are willing to work with you on it. But that's really where we have to be concentrating. You know, how do we do that so that Nancy really has to come through the Republicans to get her agenda done? This is a lot different than back in 07, right? She had the she had both the Senate, the House, and she had the presidency. Now she'll have the House, and she's going to have to go through a Republican Senate with 53 votes and a Republican president. So, I mean, it's better, but anybody who thinks that somehow they're going to still be driving the boat on the House side, that's just not the case. You can leverage. You get cooperation from Mitch McConnell and our Republican colleagues on the Senate side, and you have the president weighing in. You can do some. I think you can still do some pretty good things, but we've got some members who just have to understand it's not business as usual.
Representative Tom Emmer, great to talk with you, sir.
Great to talk to you guys. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Absolutely.
Well, we'll catch up with you again before those come around, we hope.
Yeah, we will.
Take care. Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Coming up, immigrant rights activist, so proud.
So proud.
Celebrate city council votes to create Minneapolis municipal ID. It's like a illegal alien ID card.
So proud.
We'll get into the details of this next.
Yeah
you're torn between two lovers.
I know.
Justice and Drew. That's not the lovers, by the way. It's just Twin Cities News Talk.
Between Justice.
What a twist.
I choose Drew. If I'm torn between those two.
Yeah, I choose me.
But what did we decide would be your shipping name if you two were a thing?
I love me better than anybody else.
Nobody decided anything about that. That's
sure
not
it was
a,
drawn.
It was drawn.
It was drawn. Yeah.
Yeah.
Drawn's hashtag drawn.
Yeah, drawn's already has a role in the follow up to Embark.
Available on Amazon.
Yeah, drawn. Yeah, on Amazon, at Amazon.com. Sci-fi space opera and paperback.
She's an author.
Free on Kindle Unlimited. Yes, I am. Thank you very much, Sam.
No big deal.
Did my first interview in regards to the book on Friday.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, with whom?
It was a podcast, Star Wars podcast. Yeah. Had me on.
Was it your Star Wars?
No,
podcast?
I did not interview myself. No.
And today I'm going to be on a Depeche Mode podcast about it.
No, but. My Star Wars and Depeche Mode podcasts are brought to you by Embark. All comes full circle. Yeah,
I'm gonna start a podcast about that play. Like, I love that play so much that Miami pulled off at the end of the game.
Right, yeah.
I'm going to start a podcast
dedicated to a
weekly podcast about that play.
If you missed the...
It was that good.
If you missed the play where they beat the Patriots, boy, that Brady could have been something. You can go to TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and the Justice and Drew page.
It's frustrating, though, because now Miami has a chance at a wild card spot. They're in actually a really good position for the wild card spot right now. But Minnesota also in very good position for the NFC wild card spot. And this upcoming game next Sunday between Miami and Minnesota is crucial to both teams. And I'm going to be at that game. And it's like my two best friends are arguing and I don't know. I'm going to have so many emotions and they're all going to be conflicted.
Oh, that's the best kind. It's the best kind of emotions.
It's the best.
Sean's actually jealous.
I am. I'm jealous of those conflicted emotions.
Just odd.
It's just good to feel. Does the outcome of does the outcome of tonight's game have any bearing on next week?
Well,
does it have any impact either way?
We're going to win tonight, so let's just get that out of the way. However, if something terrible were to happen and the Vikings were to lose tonight. That would certainly decrease their chances.
So what you're saying is you want the Vikings to lose tonight?
No.
You sure?
Absolutely.
It sounded like positive to me that's what he meant. I'm just trying to give him more emotions.
Yesterday was a really fun day of football, though.
Yeah, it was a good day of football.
A lot of really good games. None topped, though, by the ending of that Miami-New England game.
No. Check out the video.
Suck it, Brady.
TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and the... Justice and Drew Page. Hey, a couple of side notes before we get to illegal alien ID cards. Avengers Endgame, the trailer, broke the record for the most views in 24 hours.
Wow.
Marvel Studios tweeted out to the greatest fans in the world, thank you for being there from the beginning until the end game. Ah, I see what you did there, Marvel Studios. Clever. Making this the most viewed trailer in history with 289 million views in 24 hours.
That's crazy.
For a trailer that was good but didn't really show much of like anything. It just was them talking, looking, brooding. Mm-hmm. And being
serious.
Being sad. But, you know, when you have a movie like Infinity War that, you know, that has that, people are going to want to obviously, you know, follow it up. It is the sort of the Empire Strikes Back ending of this generation in much larger terms.
Yeah.
Even though we all kind of know, you know, let's not stay in that way.
I hope not.
There's a franchise to deal with here, people.
Right.
For crying out loud. Give me
we
a
know,
break.
You know, we know there's future Doctor Strange movies coming out. We've already heard the news. There's future Spider-Man movies coming out.
That trailer did debut over the weekend. Yep. It just has not been released online yet. So
You do not put down a cash cow.
Yeah. You know, no.
You do not snap a cash cow out of existence.
Right.
Yeah, we're not going to make Black Panther movies with Chadwick Boseman anymore.
We decided we didn't want to make money
for
anymore.
For artistic integrity's purposes, you know, it's really important to
you
the
have
story
to make sacrifices.
That Black Panther be dissolved into dust, and we're just going to stick with that for artistic integrity.
Speaking of artistic integrity, out of Hollywood Reporter. So Aquaman, right? James Wan's Aquaman. Debuted in China 2 weeks ahead of the U.S. launch and already grossed $93.6 million to land the top opening ever for a DC comic book adaptation. As a matter of fact,
to be fair, that bar was probably kind of low.
It is, but it did also beat several of the Marvel film openings too. Yeah, so it did. It's on track to make a lot of money. It looks like a hot mess. Yeah. But I like James Wan. I like the movies that he makes. And, you know, it's just going to be a big feast for the senses that you might feel like you need to go and watch a black and white film afterwards to recoup. But
I don't know. I mean, frankly,
I'm going to go watch Casablanca. Just calm down
my senses.
I'm pretty sure that didn't Assassin's Creed just completely blow up in China and do really, really, really well.
I don't.
I recall hearing that.
Yeah. So clearly, you know, they don't have the greatest judgment in movies.
It is tracking well stateside, surprisingly. So I mean, DC. But look. In all honesty, this one looks the most Marvel-y.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, hey, you know, we're gonna go the opposite end of the spectrum. Instead of dark and dingy and you know, dreary,
that we're creating an underwater universe allows us the opportunity to be big and bold and colorful.
And it is different.
2.5 hour kaleidoscope.
Yeah, that's kind of what it looks like.
So you're saying if you have epilepsy, you probably shouldn't see this movie?
Yeah, it does. It looks like just a big old CGI mess, but I can't wait to watch it.
You already have tickets, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, I do. I got them. Yeah, I got tickets for everything. The only thing I don't have tickets for is Spider-Man for this weekend, because my particular theater hasn't put them on sale yet for some reason.
Monsters.
By the way, I know we're wiping out on movies here, but Bumblebee? They premiered it over the weekend. Rave reviews across the board. They're
100% on Rotten Tomatoes. At least the early returns, early reviews. Yeah, I saw that. I was surprised. I was pleasantly surprised.
I'm excited.
Yeah, no, it'd be great if they could, because the Transformers franchise
talk about hot messes.
Such a gigantic mess of awful.
I mean, I own them all on Blu-ray and watch them all the time, but they still were hot messes.
It's terrible.
You waste your time with terrible movies.
Because it's... there's other things to talk about. They're still fun. It's still fun eye candy, you know? It's like watching something explode. It's the equivalent of that for me when you're a kid. You want to see stuff explode when you're a kid, right? So I grew up, I'm 46 years old. Now I just watch bad Michael Bay movies.
Everybody's got their thing.
Yeah, man. I'm entertained.
Everybody's got their thing.
I'm entertained.
That's all that matters. Yeah, no, but it would be. I would be very pleased if Bumblebee turned out to be a pretty decent movie. As of now, I'm still not planning on going to see it.
Oh, I think you're
going to
miss that. It sounds great.
I can be convinced otherwise.
It sounds great. Even people that like the first one, because the first one, the first Transformers is arguably the best one. Even those the people that love that one are like, yeah, this is the Transformer movie that they should have been making all along. So, all right, let's go here. Fight Back News has this article. Minneapolis Immigrant rights activists celebrated as the Minneapolis City Council voted unanimously at their final meeting of the year, December 7th, to create a new municipal Minneapolis municipal ID. The immigrant rights movement has led the push for creating the municipal identification cards in cities around the country, especially within states where immigrants are excluded from obtaining driver's licenses or other government identification. Now, will you be able to get a driver's license now with the Minneapolis municipal ID?
It doesn't appear so.
So, it really is just an illegal alien ID card.
Yeah.
So, the cops will now immediately know you're here in the country illegally, as opposed to before, where you just didn't have to tell them.
Other people, I mean, you know, it's not just for
people
who are here. Like, anybody can get one.
But why would you, if you're here legally?
Exactly.
You wouldn't need to. I could just get, like, a real one.
Yeah.
I don't need to get this fake Minneapolis municipal ID.
The story reads, and I don't... It'd be helpful if somebody could explain this to me. So far, I haven't been able to find
it. All right. I'm okay.
This is, other than being useful for immigrants, municipal IDs are generally supported by and seen as beneficial to transgender and gender non-binary people.
Okay.
Why? What is deficient in a standard driver's license or other form of ID for a transgender or gender non-binary person that a municipal ID overcomes?
Well, especially now that, if I recall correctly, the new IDs, you can choose X instead of male or female for gender, can't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I did.
No, you didn't.
It's just easier that way. How do you explain it? Well, I'm an X on the ID. Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Can you not go get a new... So if you're somebody who transitioned, can you not go get another ID to have it match you? Can you go get another ID?
I don't know.
Can you get multiple versions of the new Minneapolis municipal ID?
This is my female ID.
Sure, if that's the route you want to go, sure.
Yeah. All right, so it's generally supported by and seen as beneficial to transgender, gender non-binary, by people with housing instability.
What?
And by people too young to get other forms of identification.
I mean, I understand for maybe the younger crowd if they can't get they can't get a driver's license, so maybe it would be beneficial to have some identification. But when it comes to the gender thing, I mean, Minnesota does now offer X for their gender option on driver's license. We talked about that in October. So I don't know why that matters.
So they often include benefits that are broadly appealing, including discounts to cooperating businesses, so we can get a Groupon.
Right.
Groupon for your ID. That sounds super legitimate.
And institutions.
Get your fourth appetizer free at the butcher's block.
Institutions as well as reciprocal use as a bank card and for public services such as libraries and public transportation.
But they don't say that the... Like, this ID doesn't have those.
Right.
It might, maybe, down the line. Many such features are in the works for Minneapolis Municipal ID. They don't have them yet. You know, we're working on getting Subway to offer that fifth sub free.
This is that government attempt to create the slippery slope. I mean, that's what it is. So... We want to get to Z, so we're going to start here at A and create this so that we can set the precedent so that we can get to here.
Yeah.
Right. So this is them creating the slippery slope, because now you've got, hey, now these individuals who are here illegally or whomever, right? They have an ID. So now they need to be recognized, and so now that they have the ID, now you institutions need to open up, and if you don't, you're horrible, awful, anti-LGBTQ, anti-immigrant people.
Right. They don't talk about why this is important. They just say it's important. But they never give you the reason of why this is important. And they do that on purpose, right? They leave that out because you're right. This is a stepping stone to what they ultimately want to get to. They just say, this is so important to our communities. They pledged to add features to the municipal ID to make it broadly appealing and successful. There aren't any yet, but they have pledged to add them. I wonder how long it is before they add the hey, now you can vote,
right?
Even right, if you're here right illegally.
My ID doesn't have any special features. I can't.
Right.
I pulled it out of my wallet. I can't. Sam, do you need anything?
I get no discounts at businesses.
Yeah. Sam, do you see any special? I don't see any bonus features on my ID card. Is there any special features? Yeah.
I don't think there's any on mine either.
On my card?
Get a free red box out of it or something.
It's a ridiculous picture of me. It doesn't really look like me anymore on here. But I don't see any.
I know. There's no fee. Well, yeah. Where's the benefit for citizens?
Are there deleted scenes on my ID?
Swiping, you get access to trailers early.
Oh, all right, I'll get on board your ID if you can give me that.
Get access to Star Wars trailers a day ahead of everybody else.
No, man, it is. It's style over substance at the cost of a lot of taxpayer dollars.
Yeah,
that's what it is. It's a style over substance at the cost of many, many, many.
It's virtue.
Taxpayer
it's
dollars.
Virtue signaling too. Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of what it is. It's a way for Minneapolis city leaders, for Mayor Jacob Frey, to virtue signal to illegal immigrants and say, look, you know, I may not have been able to get, you know, full sanctuary status, but at least if I do this, then right. I'm sending the signal and letting you know that we welcome you here.
You'll be pleased to know, Drew, that in the new DC Matt Reeves Batman movie, the new bat signal is a virtue signal.
Yeah.
I figured you'd be very, very pleased.
That'll go over well with the SJW crowd.
To know that was the case. We didn't get a chance to get to the South Carolina man who went on a Christmas decoration burning spree. We'll have to save that for tomorrow's show.
And also on tomorrow's show, we're going to speak with a friend of the show, longtime friend of the show, Patty Robinson from Project Delta.
Oh, cool.
Give us an update on what's happening with that organization. Pete Hegseth from Fox News. And hopefully, David Gartenstein-Ross and voice of the Vikings, Paul Allen.
Yeah, I hope it's a good game tonight.
I hope it's a good game tonight. Go yeah. Vikings.
I hope they lose for your sake.
Have a wonderful... No! I do not want the Vikings to lose.
I that's the impression I got, right?
Have a wonderful day, everybody. You people are, both of you are terrible liars. I'm glad your stapler's gone.
Congrats on your stupid fish.